Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
Get ready for a little surf and turf action on Midnight Run Through, a podcast miniseries devoted to celebrating the 1988 contemporary classic action buddy comedy Midnight Run, written by George Gallo and directed by Martin Brest. Co-hosted by me, Jen Johans from Watch With Jen.
And me, Blake Howard from One Hate Minute Productions.
Each week, we'll explore the film we first bonded over when we became friends in 2019 by surfing through the incredible roster of guests from journalists to novelists and beyond who love it as much as we do, digging into Serrano's finances and Alonzo Mosley's FBI files. Come with us on Midnight Run Through as we crisscross the United States with the characters played by Robert De Niro, Charles Grodin, John Ashton, Yaphet Kotto, Dennis Farina, Philip Baker Hall, Joe Pantoliano, and company on screen. Today, our guests are...
Hi, my name is Dan Mecca, co-founder of The Film Stage and co-host of the B-Side Podcast.
Hi, my name is Connor O'Donnell, and I am the co-host and producer of the B-Side Podcast.
But before we go any further, let's kick things off on Jack Walsh's old turf with the ultimate question.
Why were you so unpopular with the Chicago Police Department?
Why? I need to know. Why are you so unpopular with the Chicago Police Department?
What did you do in Chicago, Connor?
Well, you see, there was this heroin dealer.
Handsome Farina, I feel.
Very. There's a lot of. There's a lot of.
Drip Lord.
Peak hot.
Peak looks.
In this movie. Like,
yeah. Peak De Niro.
Yeah, like.
I guess Grodin looked better. Peak Phil Baker Hall for sure. I guess Grodin looked better in like Foul Play and stuff when he was really like. Because he's an older guy. He's like older in this movie, even, you know?
Right.
But he still looks great, though. And then, like. Mm-hmm. But you know what rewatching this, of course, for the 47th time or whatever, it's funny how my favorite thing in the whole movie is Marvin, like, look out. I think the thing that struck me rewatching this for the millionth time was like almost the sneaky thing about Midnight Run is that there's nothing complicated about it, right? Like, and I would even argue the jokes aren't, it's not like even a sophisticated, like all of the jokes are just jokes that anybody else would make. And it's not, there's not like some highfalutin thing. There's not like much under the surface. That's not a diss. Like, and I think what it really is the energy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is there another movie that has so perfectly like bottled just manic energy? It's very interesting. I was really like, because it's not even like it's a crazily fast-paced movie, but I feel like Martin Brest like was a master for at least for like two movies of like,
and that's like a thing he liked to do though, right? Like he liked to strip things down to their barest mm-hmm. essentials, and I think that's what gives obviously like this incredible screen pairing of Grodin and De Niro, which like, so I had watched this a few weeks ago just to like watch it. And then I rewatched it last night before recording, but a few weeks ago, I just observed like what an absolute crime it is that we didn't get seven more De Niro, Grodin. Not like more midnight runs, but like
it wasn't a huge hit. It did okay, but I think it was regarded as like, oh, this didn't really work when it came out. Like that's like half true, because I think like, you know, George Gallo, who I have a weird family connection with, which we can get it. So this movie, he wrote this, and obviously he continues to have a very, he makes a lot of stuff. Like he had a lot to do with Bad Boys, right? Which is, I always think is funny, because it's like, of course he did. Because it's like, Bad Boys is, the first Bad Boys is so much like Midnight Run. It is crazy. Like, yeah. And it's different, kind of, that it's not a road trip movie, but only in that. Like, it's really very similar, right? Yeah. Like, and it's great, and it's great, and I think is it feels very interesting. So it's like people got careers off this movie. You know, Martin Brest went on to, you know, get Oscar attention for his next movie. So it's not like this didn't stop anybody, but it wasn't like a starter either, right? And I think you know, it took De Niro a while to make another comedy. You know, he does Mad Dog and Glory. That doesn't really count. It's like a different type of thing. But if analyze this, Meet the Parents is like when he starts to really lean in. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, and he also did Midnight Run 10 years ago, and that was actually pretty good, right? But it's like, it's a weird sequel with Christopher McDonald, I guess.
Couple weird sequels with Christopher McDonald.
Yeah. Couple weird TV movies or whatever, yeah.
I just think in 2023, we're so much more ready for someone who is at the peak hotness of their career to be hilarious. Like, you know, Ryan Gosling taught us with The Nice Guys, and now the upcoming Barbie, that like as hot as you could possibly be is the perfect time for you to be funny. And I can speak because one of the foundations of our relationship, my great co-host here, the Grodin to my De Niro, is that Robert De Niro is as hot as he's ever been in this movie. And he's so hot and grumpy and cantankerous and just an absolute shit that he's, I don't know if people were ready for how funny and how much of a dirtbag he was. It was peak De Niro dirtbag. It was great.
Peak hotness De Niro exists because he's got amazing I can fix him energy. Like, you know, like that's the thing. Like he's got like a very,
you
very
just,
much
you just hit, you just did a head, you know, that phrase, like the kids say headshot, like when you know, it's a headshot.
That's what it was.
Jen Johans headshot. You just got Jen. Jen's like, I can fix him. I could have fixed him.
And it's I can think of all the, you know, if I'm thinking like around this time, hot De Niro, which like, Jen, I know another movie that we've talked about in the past that a few of us love here is Falling in Love.
Love it.
With him and Streep. And he's like a total little snack in that too.
At his most beautiful.
Yeah. And granted, he's like kinder and softer in that movie than he is in this. But like, so it's like, if I feel like Jack Walsh, and I can't remember his name in Falling in Love, but Jack Walsh is like the Venn diagram of Robert De Niro's character in Falling in Love and Neil McCauley.
Yeah.
And so you're just like, just on screen, you're like, what a man. Like, I just, and
he looks great in Heat too. He does.
He's got that.
He ruined dudes for me in the 90s and growing up. Yes, for sure.
Can I just say Frank Raftus in Falling in Love. Interesting name.
Okay.
Oh, that's his character's name. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. And it's funny to think about him in this movie and then like the Sliding Doors version of it where like they wanted Cher instead of Grodin. And I don't want to change this movie in any way because it's a perfect film. But I would watch the De Niro Cher 1990.
Yeah.
Like,
well, you know, and it's fascinating.
That movie does sound hot as hell.
It took them a long time to get to Grodin. And because they had trouble casting against De Niro, right? And I think, of course they did, right? I mean, I think that's what makes the movie even more strange and wonderful, where it's like, why does it work? You're like watching it and you're like, I don't really get it. Cause it's like, in my memory, I'm always like, oh, well, Grodin's hamming it up and De Niro's playing it straight. But that's not really true at all.
It's almost the reverse a little
bit. Right? Watching it yet again last night, I was like, oh, yeah, it's like not. Because there's so many where he's like, we're like, De Niro has so many funny, and they're not like funny because it's not like Meet the Parents funny, where it's like, well, he's playing De Niro and it's funny because Stiller's right there. It's like, no, it's like he's, you know, even the last line of the movie is funny. Like, guess I'm walking. You're like one of my favorite last moments of any movie, by the way. Mm-hmm. You have changed for a thousand. Get lost, you bum. It's like, guess I'm walking. So funny.
He's got so many. I mean, you mentioned the mania, right, Dan, that this movie like bottles. And I think that that succeeds for a lot of reasons. One is like the fucking killer Elfman score, which like in the world of Elfman scores, you know, everyone talks about the Tim Burton stuff and they should. Those are great scores. Iconic. But like the score to this movie is a fucking bop. Like every time it drops, you're like, let's fucking go. Just it's jaunty. It's a jaunty score.
Well, this is also Elfman is in like fuck you mode. Not to pardon my French, but like this is Elfman like out to prove like he's a composer. And he's talked about it. Like he's, you know, was a very abrasive. And you know, pissed a lot of people off, but he was like, I'm not just the Oingo Boingo guy. Like, watch me fucking do this. Like, I'll do this next. Watch me now. And like, I think did kind of change the landscape of like, you know, Elfman like did everything, right? And he obviously he's still around, but it's like, and I think to your point, Connor, who thinks of this and is like, oh, that Elfman score, but it's like, you, the score
you
is
you wouldn't
incredible.
Know unless you read the credit. You know what I mean? Like you wouldn't think about it, but it really does have a lot to do with it. But even outside of that, like De Niro works because of his like physical mania, right? And the perfect thing is that I don't know if there's another actor in the history of like comedy in movies that does more with stillness than Grodin, right? Yeah. I don't want to say silence because obviously there are many great, very funny silent film stars and whatever, but I mean like physical stillness and silence, right? And like that's Grodin's weapon and it's amazing. And especially when whether he's doing it like, you know, whether he's just handcuffed outside a phone booth while De Niro's on the phone and he's kind of hanging his head and just waiting there, like it's like always it's like Chekhov's Grodin. You know what I mean? Like you're just like you're waiting for it to kind of come alive, but that's part of the humor. And Dan, you and I were even talking about like the bit, and I forget exactly where it is in the movie. Maybe you can remind me, but where De Niro's on the phone.
Oh, and he shakes his head.
He's talking to Joey Pants.
Oh God,
and
I love
De Niro does, he's like, I'm gonna shoot this guy and dump him in the river. And then he shakes his head.
And he looks over at Grodin, and he silently shakes his head, which I realized, like Dan sent me that clip and I started guffawing. And like, I realized that, and to your point earlier, Dan, like the jokes in this movie, they're like jokes.
They're
things like, any movie could do. It's not specific to this movie, but it employs all of it so well. And like, I realize when an actor does that, does like this, says one thing to one person, but then turns to another and like shakes their head or whatever, it works every time. It's like such a good little thing. And like De Niro has the kind of manic energy to carry that through.
It's timeless, right? And I think that's another thing. Like if you think about things like Identity Thief, The Bounty Hunter, right? People have been trying to make Midnight Run forever, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes you can make Bad Boys and it basically works, right? You can do it. It's not like it hasn't been done. I don't know that I'd say any of them are as good as Midnight Run.
And it's worth noting that Midnight Run is also, to a degree, it's just, it happened one night, right? Like it's in and of itself part of just a long
tradition. Well, and it's also coming on the heels of, right? It's like, 48 Hours is like, people always reference that as the original buddy comedy. That's not really true if you think about something like The Defiant Ones, which isn't really comedy, but it does have jokes. Like they're buddy things, you know. It's not, there is a framework, but it's certainly in the 80s it was like, it became California Split, you know, Hickey and Boggs, Freebie and the Bean, right? There certainly there were like in-laws. Versions of this. I mean, look, think about literally shows like I Spy or like, right. Like it's happening a lot. And I think it almost, you reach your you talk about peak hotness, it's almost like the this you could argue maybe this is the peak of that art form, you know, subgenre. And I just think part of why this remains, as we record on the 35th anniversary, like essential, is like nothing's rooted in, like, other than him smoking on planes or whatever, right? Like,
yeah,
nothing's rooted in like 88. It's like the jokes there then are great now. It's like, you know, I feel like if you went back and watched the Jennifer Aniston movie, you'd be like, ah, oh, that doesn't play as well. Or like, oh, okay. Like, you know, identity. It's like, oh, okay, this is really locked in 2011. And it's like, and I think that's such a common mistake, you know? And I feel like.
And Identity Thief has the unique thing of also being awful. You know, it's absolutely one of the worst movies of
this
all time.
This is my point. I mean, these are like very, it's that thing of like, well, let's put these two likable people in a movie and I guess it'll, you know, it'll be all right. And you're like, well, no.
There's more to it than that.
There's more to it than that, certainly.
I watched the Great Muppet Caper the other day and I came up with a theory that, like, if you can act like phenomenally in a scene across from a Muppet, you're all time. Like, you're just all time. And it's like, and Grodin in this, he's so hyper aware for a guy who's being super still. He's so hyper aware of his body, his posture, and how that changes entire scenes. Like, I was just thinking about him with his big hunched shoulders, and he's always like, he is taller than De Niro, but he's always sort of hunched down and he's never got his great posture until they then get into, you know, arguably one of the greatest scenes in this movie, one of the greatest scenes in any comedy, the litmus configuration scene.
Oh my God.
Oh, that's such a good scene.
Where he's
like, do you dye your hair? Do you dye your hair?
Yeah.
He's like, because his name's Red and he doesn't have red. Oh,
the situation. What's the name of your establishment?
Red's Corner Bar.
Are you Red?
Yes, sir.
You dye your hair?
No.
Why do they call you Red?
Oh, it's short for Red Wood. My last name's Wood.
What's your first name?
Bill.
Thank you for your cooperation, Bill. Hank?
Now, these are all bad. Those are good.
It's just one of those things.
Slams the counter like, you guys got 20s. Damn, like they were here. Yeah. Yes.
It's just one of those things where you've got that these two guys who are so completely perfect, but it's like he just changes his entire demeanor, and he's got this straight posture, and he's asking these weird questions, and he's staring at De Niro, and you're just looking at them going like, this couldn't, like, that's, it just blows your socks off because you're like, oh, look at the tools that this guy had. And look at how much he's just been underplaying for the whole movie. And then he just goes bang and he does this and his posture straightens and he starts looking at people out tall. Well, yeah. And just every note is so perfect. You're like, God, that's why they're good. These two guys are truly all timers. And he is just unbelievable.
And I always think his secret sauce, his secret weapon was, he would like blow up like once a movie, right? So if like you watch The Heartbreak Kid, you know, at the end, he like freaks out. It's great. But everything before that, he's freaking out, but it's like measured. He's trying to keep his cool. And then at some point he just can't anymore. And so that's why the scene on the plane, that these things go down, they go down. Like, that is the one time, really. And then maybe in the car and they're getting shot at, where he's like, you're the two worst bounty hunters, right? Like, he deploys it a couple of times. And if you watch most of his best movies, right, like, that's kind of the thing. He's not overdoing it, right? And I think, you know, if you could like point to, you know, current working comedians, the closest you get to that, and I don't, you know, and I like these performers, is like, you know, your Sudeikis's and your Batemans, they have a little of that, right? It's like more Chevy Chasey, maybe, but it's like, you know, the cynical snide thing. But I just don't know, like you said earlier, Blake, that anybody's bottled it and been able to like maintain it the way that Grodin has, where it's like, to your point, it could be against Muppets, it could be against Jeannie Berlin, it could be against Robert De Niro.
And he can employ it tonally, even if it's at a low register, high register, whatever. He can like employ it tonally in so many different situations. Like the scene where they go to De Niro's ex-wife's house, which is just like, what a scene, by the way. Like,
20
that,
out of,
that,
oh my 20, God. 20
are you
out of 10.
Grade?
Yeah. 20 out of 10 scene. 20 out of 10.
I just was like watching it last night.
Oh my God. I was crying.
I was weeping. What's amazing about the movie is that for as kind of broad as the movie can get, it does it at all the right moments. And I messaged this to Dan when I was watching it last night, that like, what a gift to just watch a movie make every correct decision, right? And like, this is not the only movie to do that, but it doesn't happen that often. And when you're and I feel like that's what makes it so rewatchable, is because like, I almost feel like I find myself rewatching it expecting to find a thing, right? And then like, you're like, oh no, they just made every decision every right time. And that scene at the house is like an example of that, because they show up.
And it opens with him saying, I'm your mom's ex-husband. Yeah, I'm your mom's child.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. Like, it's immediately funny. And then you kind of, you know, if you're someone who's watched movies, you're waiting for the older daughter to show up, and you're waiting for maybe some kind of very, you know, sentimental argument or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that never happens. And instead, they have what feels like a very real version of that conversation, right? And Grodin's just sitting there like he's the audience surrogate, right? Just like observing all of this, right?
Yeah. And you're waiting for her ex to come, or his.
Yeah, you're waiting for the high drama version. Yeah, you're waiting for the high drama version of the scene that never arrives. And it's great, because you're like, oh, I hope this doesn't do the thing. And then it doesn't. And I totally forgot how that scene ended. And when they're in the house, I was like, And when they're in the house, I was like, oh man, it would be great if the daughter gave, like, I like forgot. Like, I was like, oh yeah, that would be such a good touch. And then they go out to the car and she goes out, and she's not even, I mean, maybe she's mad at him, but not in any kind of dramatic, visible way. And she tries to give him the babysitting money, and he doesn't it's
heartbreak.
Beautiful. And like, I don't know.
His voice changes. When he sees her,
His whole body changes.
Everything changes. Oh, great. And his voice goes up, and he goes, got so big. Oh, yeah. I'm going to cry.
That's what I'm saying.
It's so good.
It's such a what? Like, I don't know dramas that could execute that scene.
Well, I feel like we say this on the B side all the time. We say this, I feel like movies don't have that scene anymore a lot of times, right? And I think I get why, and I understand the reasonings. I just think, you know, they're lesser for not having them, where it's like, you know, you're not letting the Jack Walsh's be as, you know, complicated as Jack Walsh's, where it's like, you know, he's, you know, was a good cop, but probably,
bad husband,
father, you know, obviously, certainly, you know, a lot of, you know, psychosomatic issue, you know, like he's got stuff, you know, and it's not just like, it's not all cutesy, I guess, right? It's like, I think there's so many examples where you're just like, oh man, it's just, that's, I think, another reason why it just lives on, is I just think, because, you know, like all these things, it's like a diamond, you know, being mined. It's like over time and just with process, it looks better and better. You're like, oh my God, like this, we had this, look at this, this is, oh my God, look at it, it's here. It's perfect. Right.
Yeah. And
Grodin says that.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. Jen, go.
Please, no, really? Go ahead. Go, no. Jen,
Grodin says that about his own character. When he read the script, he said it was even a better... So as much as I loved my character in The Heartbreak Kid, I'm three-dimensional as the Duke. He said he actually thought that character was better written on the page. You got different shades of him, different sides, emotions. And he was really eager to be able to play somebody that complicated.
Yeah.
And you have that too with the De Niro character, lesser so with some of the other characters. But we also see differing motivational factors for Cotto's character and Ashton, and, you know, even the characters that could be cardboard or one-dimensional have a little more to them, which is interesting. Yeah.
We'll be back
after this quick break.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Yeah, and you even get like proto stuff that's become almost, I'd argue, too common now, where it's like, you know, the gangsters who are tough, but also they're dumb, but they're not that dumb. And like even the Marvin Dorfler character, the John Ashton character, like he is dumb, but not that dumb. Right.
Yeah.
Like he can find, you know,
he's slippery Marvin.
He can. Yeah. We better cancel that card. Huh? You know, like, you know, and John Ashton, a great character actor forever and ever. And like, and even, yeah, Yaphet Kotto, of course, great actor. Like, just
has,
you know,
John Ashton ever done an A side? We're talking to the B side. I think he might be a Mount Rushmore patron.
B side only?
Yeah.
B side only.
B side only.
B side Mount Rushmore.
Still with us.
Beverly Hills Cop, man.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. There's the A side.
He's one of the breast boys.
He's a breast boy. He's in the new Beverly Hills Cop as we speak.
Can I just say also, Jack Walsh, we talked about it long ago in our chat, but Jack Walsh for De Niro, I feel, is like Joe Hallenbeck for Bruce Willis in Last Boy Scout, in that like it's a character that Bruce Willis is like, it might be the best written character of that era in a movie that was nowhere near as successful as some of his other massive movies. Obviously, John McClane, you know, was instantly iconic, and that kind of dwarfed everything else in his career. And, you know, that'll be on the, you know, that'll be on his in memoriam for sure. But it's like Jack Walsh is just a fantastic character, like top to bottom. He's unbelievable. And it's so great. And it's like when any of us fans go back, you're like, actually, this might be the one. It might be the one.
That,
you know,
yeah, like, that's what I was going to say. Like, if you asked me to list De Niro's Mount Rushmore or whatever, like, I feel like a lot of the ones.
I was thinking about this last night.
A lot of the ones that people would list might not be on mine. But like, this would definitely be on there.
In order to. This one and then one other one that I don't know that would be on a lot of lists, but let me just use the platform. He made a movie though that movie's insane. You could do a whole podcast series on those movies. Kenneth Branagh pissed Francis Ford Coppola so off so much. Francis Ford Coppola's like, I'm not making any more of these movies, literally. But the other De Niro from the late 80s that no one saw that's great, that I love, and I would be in my top 5, top 10 De Niro performances, is a movie called Jackknife.
I was just going to guess that. Yes.
I love. Great performance. I cannot overstate how good that movie is. Kathy Baker's incredible. Ed Harris is good. But my God, De Niro. It's like he's doing the second hour of Deer Hunter. But better and fuller.
Okay.
And nobody freaking saw that movie. And it's such a shame because it's like such a gift to like every actor should watch that movie. So Jen, well, I know Jen sees everything. But other than us weird people who've seen Jackknife, but God bless us. It's so.
God bless us, everyone.
I know. And it's so funny because it's like Jackknife and Midnight Run are so different. And he made them in very, you know, similar times. And anyway, just wanted to shout that out because that's just a movie that, you know, you cannot. I wonder if you can even find it right now. It's so good. Maybe it's on Tubi or something, but it's so good.
Tubi when I saw it a few years
there
ago.
There you go. Okay. Yeah. Okay. There you go. Yeah.
Can we talk about Yaphet Kotto?
Oh my God.
He hated Martin Brest.
How
perfect that is for the movie, by the way. Like, it's just one of those, like, it's kind of like, well, because I'm talking to you, Blake, I'll use this reference. It's like Miami Vice and how Colin Farrell and Jamie Foxx hating each other in real life actually just makes the movie 50 times better.
100%.
Because it's just that you can tell, but that's what helps kind of thing. And like Kodo the entire time is just has just this look on his face of like, the fuck all this.
Like, I was in blue collar for Christmas.
Yeah, right, like, what right, the right. fuck is this? Like, he doesn't even know.
Is anybody
I was in Live and Let Die, like... you pieces of shit. I was in Bone. Yeah. I was in Bone.
I was in Bone.
Bones are actually Bones.
I know it's a great movie, but I just imagine in the four or five top five that Yaphet Kotto would be like, I was in.
He says Bone, a movie.
That's the most Dan Mecca answer of all time.
Only people who have the Criterion Channel who have seen Bone, right? Like, but
I love that Matt Damon story about when he got drunk in the bar and they had to like bring police in. And, do you know who I am? And even drunk, he was funny. He's like, yeah. I'm Matt Damon from We Bought a Zoo.
I love that.
Sorry.
They buy. You know what they? You know what's so crazy in that movie? They buy a zoo. They freaking buy that zoo.
Hey, they did.
That movie's not lying to you. Okay, you go to that movie, and they freaking buy that zoo. You think they wouldn't? You, they wouldn't
spoilers.
Dare.
We're
they wouldn't
it.
Dare.
Yeah.
They wouldn't. Dare. They
if any
dare.
Of you
they
critical don't. Shills out there want to deny that they bought a zoo, that's on you.
Buy that. That's
no, there's a whole cult of people who deny that. It's yes, called yes. Zoo-anon.
Zoo-anon.
And they're all
they do it.
$100 million at the box office, but nobody's in the theater.
Yeah, exactly. No, but I think it Kodo really completes like the trifecta of the energy of Grodin and De Niro, even though he's like, you know, barely got any screen time with them. And it's such a fascinating thing, because I couldn't help on my most recent rewatch, and I know that this isn't the intention of the movie, but I couldn't help but just thinking every part of it was a metaphor for Hollywood.
Yes.
And yeah. so like, yeah. I was just like then doing the thing in my galaxy brain where I was like, well, then what is Kodo? And like, what? And like, so
Kodo's
I just
kind like
of
a like, studio executive visiting the set because he like gets him in the car. And Jack Walsh, when this is like, this is a term of endearment in Australia. So I want to apologize in advance. Like we use the C word, and I won't say it
sure.
because of my lovely co-host. I won't just say it. We use the C word sometimes as a term of endearment. And a friend of the show, Stu Coote, is like, I miss when De Niro was a shit C. Like, he's yeah, just yeah. like, when he puts those sunglasses on in the back of that car, yeah. I'm like howling. I'm like, completely, I'm just like, that is such a move. Like, he's in the car with the FBI, and this is a guy, this should be an extremely intimidating situation. Yaphet Kotto is extremely intimidating when he turns
yeah,
it on.
Perfect.
And he just goes, puts it on and just starts smiling and looking at the guy next to him. And you guys all buy this from the same store? Like, it just, it's like,
if Yaphet Kotto got me in the back of like an FBI car, I would confess to literally anything he wanted. Yes. Like, I wouldn't.
You'd be
it.
Like, you'd Lindbergh, be like,
baby, that was me. Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd be like, I love Bone, dude.
Right. Just I love life. Bone. Right. No.
I love you and Bone. It's,
that, you that's my zoo.
No, but that's the secret sauce, I think, to it, is that, you know, you mentioned the reason Grodin works is because he's not intimidated by De Niro, right? And the reason Kodo works is, you know, he's not intimidated by De Niro, but De Niro's not intimidated by him. So you're just like, he's just this like stalwart thing that is just so above the movie.
And we gotta right? like we gotta also just say before we get too late into this thing. Joey Pants just really.
We love a pants.
I mean,
yeah.
Love him.
Talk about hot pants. He is just firing off in this. Like, and it's like, well, you know, not unlike the, oh my God, what's the amazing actor from, what is it, Perfect Strangers, who's in Beverly Hills Cop, the one scene?
Bronson Pinchot.
Pinchot. Like, not unlike, you know, a well propelled Pinchot. In Beverly Hills Cop, you get like 1 minute punctuations every like 25 minutes of Joey Pants just like screaming off the, you know, and it's so funny and it's like so perfect. And like, obviously he went on to make a career of basically doing versions of that and just being a total pro. But like, there's so much of that too in this movie. That's the thing, when you say every perfect decision, it's like, that's kind of what you're talking about. And then I'll also just say too, underrated, is like writing a road trip movie is really hard, because
very
like,
hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
it's like, when do you stop? When do you speed it up? And mm-hmm. and maybe
how do you justify timelines? How do you justify what characters are where? Like,
yeah, I was gonna say, and yeah, credit, a lot of credit to Gallo in that respect, because it's like conveying time passage hard, and then I would almost say harder is like manipulating like reasons to keep them on the road.
Yeah.
Is like actually way harder than you'd think. And like,
oh yeah,
this feels so organic. All the shit that happens, it feels like it would happen. It feels like it could happen. Like, there's not, you know, there's coincidences, sure, whatever. Like, but like, it's you buy them all, you know, you roll with all of those. They're funny, they work. And really the speed, underrated.
The speed with which they go through some of those locations, like in 50 minutes, you've nearly done every location. You've gone exactly. from like, planes to trains to leaping off trains to
rivers
and cars and rapids, and like the movie's like just kissing 2 hours, and it does its thing, and you're like, the decision of when things need to be frenetic and breakneck and Jack needs to be moving and he and the Duke are running around and going from place to place, and to then when there's nice big stretches, whether it's a train carriage, whether it's something else, it's just like all those choices are so, I don't actually know if there is a legitimate framework for them that you could follow if you were trying to teach someone a script. It is very intuitive, to the credit of Gallo and Bress and the whole cast, of like, when are we overstaying our welcome? And like you said, Connor, which I think I love, is kind of the summary of this chat, is like every right decision is made. If they do not outstay mm-hmm. them, and even when they get all the groceries and they're running to the freight train, that he just drops half the groceries on the ground because the bag breaks. Like, just everything is like, this is exactly the right amount of everything that I need. And then it happens. And then there's, you know, a sleep, and then it's night, and then it's like one night. It just all that, because cinema is that, you know, great time manipulator, and playing with time is such a foundational core aspect of cinema. It's like, I don't know if there's a rule book, and these guys kind of like did it. And you can see so many, if there's one thing about Midnight Run that in all the movies that I think all four of us watch, is like, I'm like, so many filmmakers adore this movie. You can mm-hmm. tell it just drips from everything, whether it's from casting these guys, you know, whether it's Guy Ritchie, whether it's Paul Thomas Anderson, you know, like, people are looking at this movie and they love it.
PTA went on to cast Philip Baker Hall as a gambler named Sidney.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's,
you know,
it's no
joke.
He had
to do some fucking thing. I mean, have a cream soda, a sandwich. I'm going to cast him. Yeah.
Heart 8 is kind of like the it's sort of, Heart 8 is to Midnight Run what Enemy of the State is to The Conversation.
Yeah.
You know, where you're like, it's not the same character, but I'm going to basically pretend it's the same.
Yeah. I'm going to pretend Harry Cole got loud all of a sudden.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, that's all I can pretend. And then with Sydney here, it gets quieter and more manipulative and mm-hmm. darker and. Oh,
it's
because
there's a power vacuum. Farina goes away. So
Farina
goes
away.
Yeah.
Let's talk quickly about Farina before we wrap up, who is absolutely outstanding. And this is the first movie that I think truly gets the ingredients of what, like, we talked about Joey Pants, like, doing versions of this character. I feel like this is the template where people saw Farina and they're like, oh, I get it. It's not Crime Story.
That's true.
It's Jimmy Serrano. I need him to be the fast talking, eviscerate people, completely tough.
Like, you get Shorty.
This, all those movies that then did this character that he created.
Big Trouble.
He did
it a lot.
Yeah.
But he's probably the most sinister here. When he says to Walt, like,
he gets
more caricature-y, which is fine. I love those two. But this one, he has that, I forgot, in the limo where he's like, I'm going to kill you, and then I'm going to go find your wife, and I'm going to kill her. You're like, whoa, buddy. Or not De Niro, Grodin in the car.
He kind of, because you expect, I'm going to keep the Michael Mann references coming, but like, you expect Prosky in Thief, right? Mm-hmm. Like when he's mentioned, right? Like you, and maybe not him specifically, obviously, I'm just saying like that kind of character, you expect like
energy, yeah.
a very dark, very shadowy thing. And instead you get, you know, you see Farina, and I think he's used like the cutaways to him. It's like exactly the right amount, right? I think some lesser versions of these kinds of movies, like nowadays, would like stunt cast someone like Farina and only bring them in for the one scene at the end of the movie, yes. you know, after they've talked about him the whole time. So it's helpful that you see him, because you're like, oh, okay. Like he just, you underestimate him a little bit. Like you're like, oh, okay. Like I get that he's the bad guy, but he's, you know, he's got a little pep in his step and he's maybe not the guy I thought he was. And then that's why the scene later with Grodin is so effective. Cause you're just like, oh wait, no. He's like totally the kind of guy that like Prosky is in Thief or whatever. Right.
Yeah.
Like,
and the totally he says dark stuff to Jack too. He talks about his wife. He's like, oh, you know, he's a captain. Ooh, da, da, da. Like knowing the inherent corruption of the Chicago Police Department is just so fantastic. And he is a snappy dresser. He's dressing like De Niro dresses eventually in Analyze This. I know we were talking about it, but like he dresses in a super loud
casino.
Exactly. It's got that Ace Ross scene thing about him towards the end. And he's so fantastic. And then he's there. And again, it's that other thing that De Niro can do after such that hard hitting, you know, really like sniper scope, like intense dialogue that he can give. He's like, I'm going to say something to you I've always wanted to say to you. It's like, what's that? You're under arrest. And then he just walks away. It's just beautiful. Like just everything, the line delivery. It's just it's so fantastic.
Thank you guys for
coming
on.
See you in the next life. You
so
beautiful
good to
bastards.
See you. This has been Midnight Run Through with Blake Howard and Jen Johans. We'll be back next week with another episode, but until then...
See you in the next life. See you in the next life.
This is the place where Black is the main character, where we dive into something new like the latest season of Vim, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction. Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love. And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop and BMF. Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old-school greats and new-school hits. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.